arrival. "The batteries and the cameras will run out soon," Nico warned. "Is everything saved and downloaded somewhere?" Liam asked, standing behind him, next to a clearly impressed Senator Cruz. Nico turned around in his chair.
"Yeah, but why?"
Liam glanced toward the floor.
"In case we need to refer back to it when we figure out planning and timing."
"There's nothing left to do then," Cole said, "but practice. And wait."
4 days of waiting. 4 days of basic self-defense training. 4 days of reminding the kids to keep the safety catch on their guns until they were ready to fire, to brace themselves when they needed to, and to use their abilities before they'd think about firing. And now, day 3 of the run-through. The first day had been simple enough. Most of the kids in this group, the East River kids at least, had experienced overpowering a large truck in a highway setting. They'd had to do it any number of times to steal supplies and food. The trick was reminding them repeatedly that they couldn't destroy the truck in the process. I adjusted the strap on my tactical helmet, tightening until I felt it dig into the soft skin beneath my jaw as I crouched down, breathing in the clean, cool February air. It was my first time outside in what felt like a month, and we'd only been allowed to position ourselves outside of the garage's loading dock door. It had taken us nearly half a day to clear out space in the garage, temporarily moving the cars, Liam's bike, and the bigger pieces of furniture and crates outside. I saw him lean back, as if checking to make sure they were all still on the other side of the building where we'd left them. I'd had a hard time putting a finger on his mood today. It seemed to shift by the minute. The kids behind me were a cluster of disordered black fatigues. Each piece had been found, collected, and pulled by Liam and others running the supplies, specifically because they were close to the fatigues worn by the PSFs. The look was pulled together with the assault rifles in their hands. Everyone had spent hours of the last 3 days in the makeshift shooting range we'd set up. The rapid firing of the bullets had steeled my nerves more than I'd expected. Lacing up black combat boots, adjusting holsters and utility belts, had made me feel like I was stepping back into a shell I'd abandoned when I'd split with the League. It was a good fit. Steadying, at least. I felt my feet fixed firmly to the ground with the added weight of the necessities of combat. Liam put a hand on my shoulder to steady himself as he adjusted the strap on his rifle, and for the 10th time today, I felt my chest tighten, my hands clench around my own gun. To think I'd believed being in the Children's League would destroy him, ruin every good part of him. The only person dragging him into this firefight was me.
"Begin!"
We came at the door in a rush of over-eager energy, pouring through the opening. I felt the lick of adrenaline against my heart, counting off the timing in my head. The two blues in front of me, Josh and Sarah, raised their rifle sights to their eyes and stepped into the makeshift hallway we'd constructed out of pallets, simulating the layout of the lower-level hall we'd seen. They swept their hands out toward Zu and Hina, who were pretending to be the PSFs posted at either end of the hall standing guard, and the girls made a dramatic show of pretending they were thrown back. Liam actually laughed behind me, which set my teeth on edge.
"Stop!" Cole called from his perch atop one of the ladders. "Girls, you have to take this seriously, otherwise I'm subbing you out. There's not enough time for us to be dicking around, not when it could mean this team not getting their timing down. Got it?"
Zu and Hina wilted at his sharp words, but nodded.
"Go from the top," Cole said. "Everyone reset, but this time, Liam, switch places with Zach. Yeah, you'll be behind Ruby. Lucy, hop out. You too, Mila. Sorry, ladies, you're not right for this op. I want Gonzo and Ollie to take their place."
Liam opened his mouth, but caught himself. I gave him a quick nod, letting him know it was all right. Cole had been making these switches and substitutions for the past 2 days, trying to get the best chemistry in the group. We were getting there, but the birthing process had been painful, and I was feeling each day passing like a strike to the back of the head. I would have given anything for Vida to be here next to me. I checked in with Nico every single day to see if he'd gotten another status update from them, but the last contact they'd made had been to let us know they had safely arrived in Kansas.
Begin!
And the dance started all over again. We moved into the garage two at a time. Gav, at my left, grunted as he dropped down to his knee. He pretended to cover Josh and Sarah as they pretended to zip-tie Zoo's and Hina's hands and feet.
Remember,
Cole was shouting, his hands cupped around his mouth.
The point is to be as silent and fast as possible. Do not fire unless your life depends on it. Get the PSFs down silently so they can't alert the camp controllers.
Zack and I bolted forward, him covering me as I ducked into a gap between two pallets meant to represent the control room. I reached a hand out toward Lucy, who was now posing as the camp controller at the helm of the camp's security. She took a generous step back, her eyes widening in what I thought was real alarm. My stomach clenched. Zack went through the motions of restraining the other kid posing as a camp controller. Then we were at the back of the pack, joining the others as they hit the other end of the hall, and we mimed going up a flight of stairs. Liam said something under his breath that made Mike, Gonzo, Ollie, and Sarah burst into laughter.
Stop!
Cole called.
Lee, you're out. You too, Mike.
Liam swung around, a look of total disbelief on his face.
Excuse me? You?
Cole repeated slowly, as if Liam's hearing had been the problem.
Are out. What the hell for?
Liam spun toward me, gesturing with his hands, asking me for something I had no intention of giving him. The minute the words had left Cole's lips, relief had flooded my system. Liam's expression changed abruptly, darkening as he shook his head and twisted back around in the direction of his brother.
Why? I've done everything you asked. Both me and Mike have experience hitting trucks. So why?
The kids around us began to shuffle their feet and look away, the tension swiftly moving from awkward to painful.
Because, Cole said, jumping down from the ladder, I decided 12 is too many. You guys are practically tripping over each other. We need to be in and out faster and quieter. If you take this personally, you're an idiot. That's bullshit, Liam said, his hands on his hips. You just want me out of this. Well, your attitude isn't doing you any favors either, baby brother, he said, holding out his hand. Your helmet and gun. You go cool off somewhere. Mike, I need you as another PSF. Third door on the right. Yes? You got it.
Liam ripped the gun strap off his shoulder, pushing it into his brother's chest, and unbuckled the helmet, letting it fall to the floor. He turned on his heel and strode toward the garage's tunnel door, his body rigid with stiff, furious lines. I held up one finger to Cole, not waiting to get a negative response from him, and followed Liam out. He was already a good 10 feet into the tunnel before I caught sight of him and called, Hey! He stopped, but didn't turn around. I unclipped my own helmet and approached slowly, recognizing the red staining the back of his neck, the way his hands were clenched into fists, the veins stood out in his forearms, he had such a tight grip. Liam, I said softly, look at me.
What? He said, plucking at his fatigues. Did you need me to hand over these two?
I want you to calm down, I said. I'm sorry, but you know it has to be this way.
And which way is that? He asked. The one where you stand there silently and let me get dismissed like a kid being sent to time out?
I let out a sound of frustration. We have to listen to him. There has to be some kind of order here, structure. Otherwise, this whole thing will fall apart. Liam stared at me, disbelief fading into a humorless smile.
I get it, he said as he started walking again. Believe me, Ruby, I get it.
By the time we filed back into the ranch 6 hours later, He was long gone. Zoo was waiting for me in the bunk room, a folded piece of paper clutched in her hands. She watched me as I read it, her eyes making my heart ache.
Finding Liv. Good luck.
I wasn't upset.
I was furious. He left without taking any kind of backup again? I said, pulling my shirt up over my head and kicking off my fatigues.
Zoo had already changed into the oversized shirt and boxers she slept in.
Didn't he?
She nodded, then held up her notebook with the message, "What's going on?" She flipped the page. "Why are you acting like idiots?"
"Did Chubbs tell you to ask me that?"
Zoo went back to the first page, underlining the first question twice. "What's going on?"
"Just a disagreement," I assured her, the little lie already gnawing at me.
I pulled the worn shirt and sweats on and sat down next to her on my bunk.
"Looks like it's just you and me tonight."
I lay down on my back and she followed suit. I was grateful for the warmth of her next to me, her presence, which always seemed to sweeten sour situations. I'd spent the rest of the simulation feeling like someone was walking over my grave. I still couldn't shake the feeling. She picked up her pen and notebook again and wrote, "Are you okay?"
"I've been better," I admitted.
"You keep going to your bad place," she added. "I have one too. I get trapped there if I stay too long."
I shifted so I could wrap an arm around her shoulders and draw her in closer.
"You don't have to go there alone." She paused, as if collecting her thoughts. "Do you remember right before I left East River? I said I had something to tell you, but I didn't know how."
"I do."
Thinking about that day was like raking nails down over my heart. "It wasn't really that I didn't know how. I wanted the words to be better. More beautiful, I guess. But Lee told me it doesn't matter. Sometimes simplest is best."
She turned the page, scribbling the words down quickly. The sound of the pen against the paper was strangely soothing.
"It doesn't matter what you do, it won't ever change how we feel about you. I'm proud to be your friend." I stared at her, swallowing the knot in my throat.
"Thank you. I feel the same way about you. The luckiest day of my life was when I met you. You saw how scared I was."
"It wasn't because you were scared," Zoo wrote, then added quickly, "Maybe a little, but do you know how I knew we could trust you?"
I shook my head, fascinated by this insight into her judgment.
"When the people following you, looking for you, started to get really close, you were going to run again, not hide behind Betty. It was because you didn't want them to accidentally find me either, right?"
"That's right." She put out her hands as if to say, "Well, there you go." She picked up her pen again.
"That meant you were never going to purposefully put us in danger, that you were a good person."
"That's an awfully big assumption," I said. "It could have just been me panicking, not thinking at all."
Zoo gave a little shrug. "Better to risk helping someone than regret what you could have done. Lee said that."
"That sounds like him," I said dryly. And that was the exact reason Chubbs and I had to be so vigilant about every new kid we crossed paths with.
"Are you and Lee fighting about the memory thing?"
"Ah, so he or one of the others had told her."
"Not exactly."
"But then, what were we doing exactly? Not being friends to each other, not being whatever it was we had been."
"It's complicated."
"After what I did to him, it's been nothing but complicated. And I accept full responsibility, but..." Zoo, as always, zeroed in on the root of the situation.
"Do you think he doesn't forgive you?" Reluctantly, I reached around her, pulling out the Beach Boys CD case from the dresser drawer. The paper was soft and beginning to tear at the center from how many times I'd opened and read it and refolded it again. I don't know why I felt like I had to keep rereading it every night, punishing myself with it. Zoo read it, the crease between her dark eyebrows deepening. She clearly recognized his handwriting, but when she looked up, I saw confusion, not understanding. "What?" She wrote, "What does this prove?" "The fact that he felt like he had to write this is a pretty big clue he thinks I'll do it again. Take his memories, I mean. Send him away." Zoo calmly folded the note back up and then reached up to smack me in the nose with it, with her patented, "Are you serious?" look. Seeing I still wasn't getting it, she picked up her notebook and pen again. "Or he wrote it because he was scared someone else would make you do it, like his brother. He says he wants to stay. This means he wants to stay with you, with us, even knowing what happened. Did you even ask him about it? Does he know you took it?" She gave me a very different look now. "You shouldn't take things that don't belong to you."
"I haven't talked to him about it," I admitted.
"Did you miss this?"
She pointed to the last line. I shook my head, swallowing hard. "I saw."
Zoo studied me for a moment, dark eyes penetrating, flickering with understanding. "Do you feel like you don't deserve it?"
I think he deserves better than the best I could offer him."
It was the first time I'd admitted it out loud, and somehow putting it into the open only added to the weight of truth. I felt sick, lightheaded. "He deserves better than me." She looked torn between kicking me and hugging me, but settled on the latter. Too late, I'd realized how this would affect her, how someone already so panicked and afraid would react to seeing the people she thought of as her rocks crumbling.
"When he comes back, you have to talk to him, okay?"
"Okay," I said, not as certain as she was that he'd want to talk to me.
"If you go to the bad place again," she said simply, "tell one of us so we can help you back out."
"I don't mean to be such a burden," I whispered. "All I ever wanted to do was protect you."
"It's not a burden if people are willing to carry it," she pointed out and, having made her final point, let herself drift to sleep.
I rolled onto my side and tried to do the same. It must have taken at some point, because then I was dreaming, walking the damp, dark hallways of HQ, taking the path to Albin's cluttered office, eyes tracking the exposed light bulbs overhead. The next moment, I was in a different hallway, cold tile under my feet, small hands fisted in my shirt. I jerked back, my mind ripping out of the foggy haze of sleep, scrambling away from Zoo's terrified look. The lights in the lower-level hallway were switched off, as they always were after midnight. She stood in contrast to the shadows, worry overtaking confusion on her features. Her brow creased as she stepped toward me tentatively, reaching for the hand I'd pressed over my heart, trying to steady it.
"Sorry," I told her. "Sorry, sleepwalking. Stress, it's..."
I couldn't get my tongue around the right words, but she seemed to understand. Zoo took me firmly in hand and walked me back toward our room, never once letting me stumble. My head felt light enough to drift away, and when I climbed back into bed, I banged my clumsy knees against the metal frame. The last thing I was aware of was Zoo stroking my hair, smoothing it again and again, until the pain pounding in my skull eased, and I was able to breathe normally again. In the earliest hours of the next morning, the op team and I set off for the open desert of Nevada. 15. I kept my belly down flat against the wash, ignoring the tinge of pain in the muscles of my lower back. It seemed wrong for the desert to be so damn cold, but I guess without the sun, and without the benefit of thick-leaved trees and brush, there was nothing to trap the heat of the previous day. Nameless mountains hovered behind us, the lighter of two deep shades of black. I kept looking over my shoulder as the hours passed, watching their jagged shapes lighten to the color of a new bruise. Aside from the yellow, dried-out clusters of low, prickly desert shrubs, there wasn't much of anything else to look for.
"What was that?"
I heard Gav ask.
"Is that a rattlesnake? I heard rattling."
"That was me drinking from my canteen, dumbass," Gonzo said.
"Jesus, dude. Did you leave your balls in California?"
I shushed them, and then shushed them again when one of the girls started complaining about having to pee.
"I told you not to drink that much water on the drive," Sarah told her. "You never listened to me."
"Sorry, I don't have the bladder of a freaking sloth."
"You mean camel," Sarah corrected.
"I meant sloth," the other girl said.
"I read somewhere they only have to go once a week."
I rolled my eyes heavenward for strength, wondering if this was what Vida felt like every moment of every day.
"Status."
Cole's voice was clipped in my ear. "Same as an hour ago," I said as I pressed my earpiece. "Nothing so far. Over." We'd taken the two SUVs down to this barren stretch of Interstate 80 and were dropped off on the side of the road. Lucy and Mike turned the cars around and drove them back to Lodi. Cole and I had mapped out the sweet spot on the highway in terms of distance from the camp. Just far enough from the camp that no one would notice the vehicles making a quick stop, but the only cover we had to hide in was the wash running along the cracked asphalt. We curved our bodies to fit its shape and waited. It was another 10 minutes before my ears picked up on the faint hum of a distant engine. I knew I hadn't imagined it when the others began to squirm, trying to get a better look at the lip of the wash. A few seconds later, the first pinpricks of light appeared, headlights that grew in size and intensity, slicing through the darkness. I glanced down the wash, and there it was, three bursts of light from a flashlight. Ollie had been stationed there to check the markings on the truck. It was the right one. Zack slapped my back, the excitement bringing a grin to his face. I felt it like a jolt of electricity to my system and flashed a smile back at him as I stood. I walked out into the middle of the road, hands shaking only a little bit, as the semi-trailer truck barreled down the road. I held up my hands as the headlights blinded me. I couldn't see the details of the driver behind the windshield, but I saw the quick movement as his hand went to strike the horn. I let the invisible hands in my mind reach out blindly, feeling for his, stretching, 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 and connecting. The truck rolled to a stop 3 feet away from me. There was a flurry of movement at my left as the makeshift tact team came scrambling up from the wash, moving toward the rear of the truck to open the trailer and jump inside. I pushed the earpiece as I jogged around to open the passenger side door of the truck's cab.
"We have our ride. Over."
"Fantastic. Proceed with second phase."
The driver was frozen behind the wheel, waiting for his instructions from me. I searched through his memories and teased one up from the week before, of him making this exact ride in. I pulled that to the forefront of his mind and said one word. "Drive." I crouched as low as I could in the cab, drawing the black ski mask down over my face. I pulled myself up to look over the dash periodically to make sure we were still heading in the right direction. The truck driver had been blasting some rap music that was angry and pounding enough to set me on edge, so I reached over and switched it off, missing the exact moment the gray, sun-bleached two-story structure and its 10-foot fence came into view. "In sight," I said. "Everyone good at the back of the bus?"
"Peachy," was Zach's reply. ETA?
2 minutes. I took another steadying breath as we turned and headed off the highway onto a dirt road. The two PSFs at the gate dragged the thing open as the driver, a thick-waisted, bearded man in a short-sleeved button-down, went through the motions of turning the truck and reversing through it, his face blank. A tarp was spread out over the loading area adjacent to the main building. There were already flatbed carts out, waiting for the supplies to be unloaded. Two PSFs were sitting on them, smoking, but threw the cigarettes away and stood as the truck backed toward them. The others, having secured the gate, were hurrying back over as I took one last deep breath.
"We're in. Prepare for action," I said.
"Two PSFs positioned at your door. Two more coming around the back."
"Silent and fast," Cole reminded us. 10 minutes starts now."
A fifth approached the driver's window, calling out a,
"Morning, Frank!"
I pushed the image of Frank rolling down the window into his mind, leaned over him, and, before the PSF's eyes could so much as widen, had my gun pointed directly at his face. He was young, around Kate's age, maybe. At the sight of me, he lost the easy smile on his face. His whole body pulled back in alarm, and he reached for his rifle.
"What the fu-"
"Hands where I can see them." I couldn't control Frank and the PSF at the same time, and Gonzo and Ollie eliminated my need to. One of them cracked him on the back of his skull with the butt of his own rifle, and the other had him face down in the dirt, gagged and secured with zip ties. He was hauled behind the truck, where four other limp forms were already propped up. I knew some of the kids hadn't understood why we'd run through this so many times, but I think, now that we were here, they saw the answer in how smoothly we assembled into formation. The real benefit of simulations was to train your nerves to behave, to make something like this feel as normal as waking up and walking to the showers each morning. It seemed to have worked. Even as we approached the door the PSFs had left open and quietly stepped inside of the building, the group felt as steady as stone to me. We certainly looked menacing enough, dressed in all black and wearing ski masks. The hall was dark, but a stream of light spilled out of one of the rooms, the third one down on the right. I felt myself pause. The smell of bleach tinged with lemon, shoe polish, and human odor gripped me in a stranglehold. Some part of me recognized that it made sense for this camp to smell almost exactly like the infirmary in Thurmond. Why wouldn't they use the same military-ordered cleaning supplies? But more than anything, it rubbed up against my nerves. Gav stepped into place, kneeling down and aiming as the others crept forward. Voices trickled down the tile from the open door I'd spotted before. I waved the kids forward and crept along the wall with them until Zack grabbed my arm and pointed to the door marked CR. Control room. That was our cue. As we ducked out of formation, I cast one look back into the open room. Four PSFs were sitting around the table, uniform jackets slung onto a nearby couch and the backs of their chairs, as they laughed and smoked, dealing cards around a cramped table. As Gav and Gonzo filled the doorway, I saw one look up, and then look again, diving for a weapon he never reached. The Blues upended their table, threw the PSFs against the wall, and silenced them before they could gasp out a warning over their radios. That made 9. Nico had reviewed the footage from Pat and Tommy repeatedly, counting the different faces in uniform he saw. 2 camp controllers, 13 PSFs, 15 targets total. Zack and I pressed ourselves against the wall, and I reached out and knocked against the control room door.
"Enter!"
a voice called. It was a good thing we hadn't tried to charge it. The thing was locked from the inside. I heard a buzz, and then a click, and Zack didn't waste a moment before pushing it open with his shoulder. Inside there were 2 young women, both in black button-down shirts and slacks. The room was a wall of monitors that kissed up against a row of computers. Most of the screens were set on a series of bunks and the children sleeping in them. But they switched over to the hall, to the outside area, the recreational room across the way, as we stepped inside.
The one who was monitoring the screens dropped her mug of coffee down her front when she spotted what was happening across the wall. The other, standing in front of some kind of panel of switches and dials, turned and let out a small scream when she saw us. Zack had her pressed up against the ceiling with his abilities a full second after I was already in the camp controller's mind. An avalanche of faces, sounds, colors, landscapes streamed through my mind, thundering down over me. I searched for the relevant ones, information about how they reported in statuses, the timing of it, as Zack brought the other screaming woman down, gagged her with cloth, and zip-tied her safely away from the controls to one of the pipes running along the far right wall.
"Done," he called. "We have 8 minutes. Erasing camera footage."
Nico had shown him how to set the footage back, to loop through already recorded images, making an educated guess about the programs they used. It must have been close to reality, because Zack punched a fist in the air when he was done. "Get the rooms unlocked upstairs," I told him, pointing to the nearest computer. "Password is capital P, capital S, capital F, 13938, !! Did you get that?"
"Affirmative."
He relayed the next part to the rest of the team who were, hopefully, already heading up the stairs.
"Unlocking doors."
I brought up the memory of the woman sitting at one of the computers, the message she'd relayed to the PSF system, exactly how I wanted her to do it now, and then again in another 2 hours. When I pulled back, I took away her memories of Zack and I entering. She simply nodded and went about her business, standing in front of the monitors, her eyes unseeing, her face a blank slate.
"Control is out of play. Over," I said.
"Roger that," came Cole's relieved reply. "Proceed upstairs with the others."
Zack hit the button beside the door, unlocking it, and stepped out. I was right behind him when he jumped back, raised his gun, and aimed.
"It's me!"
came a familiar voice.
"It's me! Don't shoot!"
Disbelief, dumb and mute disbelief, stole over me as I confirmed who was standing at the other end of Zack's rifle. Liam.
"What the hell, man?"
Zack shouted, throwing a furious punch toward him.
"Jesus, I almost shot you!"
I hadn't moved. It didn't make sense. It wasn't him. He had gone to find Olivia. He wouldn't have come in after us. He couldn't have been so stupid. Not Liam. Not Liam. I was so fixated on his face as I yanked my ski mask up and over mine that I didn't see the red-haired woman behind him, wild curls tumbling around her long-sleeved black shirt. She wore black jeans and boots, but I didn't get a clear image of her face until she lowered the camera that was clicking wildly, capturing everything around her.
"Who?" I heard myself say in a low, furious voice. "The hell is this?"
"Status?" Cole asked. "Jim, status."
Liam matched my stony look with one of his own.
"This is Alice from Amplify."
"Dude," Zack said, shaking his head. "Dude, this is crazy."
Alice looked young, late 20s, maybe, but a clean face, free of makeup, made her appear only a few years older than the rest of us. She was taller than Liam, slender, but strong enough to haul a backpack that looked like it weighed twice as much as she did.
"Nice to meet you," she said. "Wow, this is wild."
Liam wasn't looking at me for my approval, just my reaction. All at once, adrenaline kicked back into my system, throwing me into action. Accept, adapt, act. I pressed a finger to my earpiece, cutting off Cole's request for status, and turned toward the staircase at the end of the hall.
"Liam is here," I told him, "with a reporter from Amplify."
Static trickled over the line. Zack shot me an uncomfortable look as we hit the stairs, as if he, too, were picturing Cole's reaction to this. Finally, he answered.
"Say again?"
I repeated the information to him again as we rounded the corner of the stairs and came through the door that the team had left propped open.
The strange, familiar smell I'd breathed in on the way up finally had an explanation as we burst through the doors. The gagged and bound soldiers were secured against the same wall they'd been using to stencil and paint a message. Obedience corrects deviance. The op team had been in the process of ushering the kids out of the 5 dark rooms lining the opposite wall, trying to coax them to come out. I saw the problem immediately. "Take off your masks," I told the others. "It's all right. The cameras are off." The kids wouldn't come out until they saw that we were kids, too, that they weren't being tricked or picked up by a different set of monsters in black uniforms. One of the teen boys from the first room stuck his head out, saw the gun Gav was holding, and immediately retreated back inside. He would have slammed the door shut if Josh hadn't caught it. Alice's camera was clicking like an insect, trying to take in the sight from every angle. I spun on my heel and knocked the camera out of her hand, wishing like hell she hadn't had the strap around her neck so it would have smashed against the tiled floor. "Do you mind?" I snapped. God, it was bad enough the kids were in here, but couldn't she at least give them a second of peace to collect themselves? "Ruby," Liam started, but Alice waved him off. "It's fine, I get it." But I saw her lift her camera again anyway, this time set to record video instead. Clearly, she didn't get it.
5 minutes, Cole warned. "Are you heading out?"
I jogged to the nearest door, looking inside. The wooden bunks creaked as weight shifted on them, and faces squinted at me. I reached in and turned the lights on so they'd have a better view of my face. The stench of sweat rolled out, slamming into me before the whimpers and whispers of fear came. Dozens of small faces emerged from the dark, hands held up to shield their eyes. Oh my God. They were wearing those thin, papery uniforms, coated by whatever color they'd been classified as. I felt my stomach start to churn. One girl turned, flashing the Psy ID number someone had hastily scrawled across the back of her shirt in permanent marker. These were really kids. 9, 10, 11, 12, with only a few clearly older than 14. All of them with those hollow cheeks carved out by hunger. Narrowed by need, if not for food, then for everything else.
"You made it!"
The longer I stared at the boy that pushed his way to the door of room 3, the harder it was for me to believe that it was Pat. They'd shaved down his dark mass of hair, stripped him down to a blue, scratchy cotton t-shirt and shorts. He'd been here less than a week, and already he'd let his edges bleed into the darkness of this place. All at once, the boys in Tommy's room gasped and reached for him as he stepped into the hall, pleading him in these small voices to come back.
"At night, you don't leave the cabin,"
one of the older girls in cabin 27 had told me.
"You don't leave, even if it's burning down. They'll just say you were trying to escape, and that's the only reason they need to shoot you."
None of the other kids followed Tommy and Pat out. My mind scrambled to come up with something to avoid us having to carry them out.
"My name is Ruby," I said quickly, "and I'm one of you. All of us here are like you, except for the woman with the camera. We're getting you out of here, taking you to somewhere safe, but we have to move fast as you can, without hurting yourselves or anyone around you. Follow them." I pointed to Gonzo and Ollie.
Fast, okay?"
Damn it. They still weren't moving. We weren't moving, and time was ticking down so loudly in my ears, I couldn't distinguish the seconds from my heartbeat. I opened my mouth, wondering what else I could say to them. What were the words that had convinced me to take the pills Kate had offered? Or had I just realized it was my last chance of ever getting out? For them, maybe it was a matter of shock. We'd come charging in so quickly, they couldn't wrap their heads around the reality of it.
"Rosa," I called. "Rosa Cruz? Is there a Rosa Cruz here?"
No one spoke or raised their hands, but I saw a small movement out of the corner of my eye, a shifting that was as subtle as someone straightening up. I took a step around Tommy, scanning the 10 faces of room 6. There was a girl at the back, nearly as tall as I was, maybe 13 or 14. She must have had long, glossy curls at one point in her life, but someone had gone to town hacking it all off. I didn't see a trace of Senator Cruz in her face, aside from the warm olive tone of her skin and her dark eyes. But when she tilted her head and shifted her gaze toward me, defying her fear, just for that second, that was all her mother. "Rosa," I said, "your mom is waiting for you." She flinched at the sudden attention, but after a deep breath, she stepped out of her pitch-black room like she was tearing away from the last grip of a nightmare. Rosa's hands clenched at her sides. Her breathing came hard and fast as her eyes darted around. "Look at me," I told her, holding out my hand. "Just at me. This is really happening. I'll get you out of here. Okay?"
"Okay."
Her trembling, cold fingers touched the tips of mine, sliding into place. The tension bunching her shoulders didn't relax until my grip on her tightened. The other girls in her room flowed out behind her, and it was only then that the other kids lost that last bit of hesitation and followed. "Home base," I said, pressing my earpiece. "Initiating evac."
"2 minutes,"
Cole said, sounding a hell of a lot more stressed than I felt. This was good. They were coming with us. They trusted us. The gratitude I felt for that small fact made my eyes prick with tears. The others followed, lining up one by one and moving quickly. Feet slapped against the tile, smearing out the puddle of wet paint that had drifted from the forgotten can. Some of them stopped to look at the two bound PSFs, but there was no laughter. No smiles, no cheers. Of course not. It must have felt like they were moving through a dream. I guided Rosa into the line, glancing at the wall where the soldiers had been writing out that message. The kids leaned against it and used it to brace themselves as they rounded the corner down into the stairwell, smearing that same red paint, tracking their hands and fingerprints through it. Alice stood frozen in front of it, lifting her camera one last time. It was the last clear, still image I had before the night sped up, gliding into a blur that carried us down the stairs, down the main hall, and out the very same door we had come through. The blast of cold air washed away the pounding heat from my blood. I shook the fear off and let myself imagine it, how good it would feel when this was Thurmond we were walking out of, when I passed through that gate one last time. Kate may have gotten me out, but until that moment, I'm not sure I'd fully recognized that I was still a prisoner of that place, and it wasn't the cure that would give me the feeling of finally being freed from this horrible reality. It was knowing, with certainty, that I would never be forced to go back. Zach helped Liam lift his motorbike onto the back of the truck and gave Alice the lift she needed to get up into it. I caught his questioning look as he took her hand and nodded. She had to come back with us. She'd seen too much, was a security risk. Gonzo and Ollie were the last to climb into the truck's trailer, having dragged the PSFs we'd left outside into the interior of the camp, along with the secured truck driver. The kids were forced to sit on the plastic-wrapped pallets and boxes, some of them clutching yellow and orange glow sticks and flashlights we'd given them, so they wouldn't feel like they were being locked in total darkness. As I rolled the trailer door down, I saw Liam sitting with his back against the siding, his arms resting over his knees, watching me. I pulled the door firmly into place and secured it with the latch. Zach was already up in the front seat, ripping the GPS out of the console. He rolled down the window and tossed it outside. One less way for them to track us when they figured out what was happening. I was the one to run to open the gates. The fence wasn't electrified, but the PSFs had managed to secure it with a padlock. I turned to look at Zach and shook my head. He waved me back, and I climbed into the cab with him.
"Brace yourself,"
he warned, relaying the message to me and the whole team in the back. The truck lurched forward and barreled through the gate, sending pieces flying as if they'd been made of styrofoam. A section caught on the front hubcap and sparked against the ground, but was knocked away as we veered onto the highway, and we sped away before the sun had the chance to start rising at our backs. 16. We drove a full 4 hours before ditching the semi-trailer truck in Reno. In an ideal world, we would have taken it straight to Lodi, only stopping once to let the kids relieve their bladders and stretch their legs, but it was marked with military insignias. Someone was bound to notice it if we kept going. Senator Cruz had arranged for an old Greyhound bus to be brought down from Oregon and left at Reno's city limits, warning it was the only time she'd be able to put this particular contact into play as the former state governor, her college classmate, had been careful to never entangle himself too deeply in matters of the federal coalition, and had been rewarded by Gray with the right to keep his job. Zach and I helped each kid down, and I couldn't stop the small smile on my face at seeing the way they all seemed to want to spin around in the warm sunlight. Rosa was one of the last off, bypassing Zach's hands for mine. "Okay?" I asked her. "How are you doing?" She stretched her arms back and forth, swinging them around. I made sure that I kept the smile on my face so she'd know it was okay to let herself believe this would work out, something I'd learned from Kate. I wondered what she'd think of all this as we lifted the boxes of food and medical supplies off the truck, putting them in the undercarriage of the Greyhound bus. When I saw her again, I would make sure she knew the full magnitude of what she had done for me. I wanted to believe that if I felt all of these things, if I brought her face to mind and focused on it, she'd somehow be able to tell I was thinking about her, that I hadn't forgotten her, that I was coming for her. Liam walked Alice to the bus, ignoring the glances the team shared as they passed by them. After exchanging a few last quiet words with her, he got back on his motorcycle, explaining to Zach he was going to ride behind us. I held a hand out to Rosa, who took it gratefully. Zach jumped into the driver's seat and craned his neck back, counting to make sure that everyone was on. The kids squeezed into the seats and onto the floor. After a moment of petrified uncertainty, the older kids began to play with the vents, fiddling with the lights. "Pull your curtains all the way closed," I told them. "It's going to be another 3 or 4 hours to where we're going." "Where is that?" one of the kids asked.
"California!" Gavin sang out, pounding his meaty hands down on the seat in front of him. "Let's go already!" "Seatbelts!" Zach called as he started the bus.
Then, realizing there was a speaker system, repeated the order through that.
"Seatbelts!" "Welcome to Psy Bus Services. I'm Zach, and I'll be your driver on this epic quest to freedom. If you look out your windows, but obviously don't because Ruby just told you not to, you can give Nevada the finger as we pull away."
That, at least, made a few of them crack a smile. I gave Zach a thumbs up, and he returned it. The bus lurched forward, and we were off again, really cruising. I smiled despite myself, winging along on my own cloud of happiness. I didn't come down, not for a second, until I glanced at Rosa. She had taken the window seat, drawn her legs up to her chest to tuck under her shirt, and pressed her face into her knees. "Rosa?" I said, putting a hand on her back. The number on her shirt pocket, 9229, had been her whole identity in that place. I wanted her to hear her name, to feel human.
"You shouldn't have come. We're not ready yet. We're still broken."
"No," I said quickly. "No, you're not. You're different, that's all."
"They said the good ones were the ones that died," she said,
and I noticed a faint scar running down her left cheek, a narrow, spiraling pink line. What could have left a mark like that, other than someone intentionally scratching it into her skin?
that we were all wrong and we'd never get out. But they never did anything to help us. I want to be fixed. We all did. We did everything they asked, but it wasn't enough.
If they made you feel that way, then they were the ones who were wrong, I said. It took me a moment to realize why the words came so easily. Clancy, how was this any different from what he kept trying to tell me? I shifted uncomfortably, trying to think of Kate instead, how she had talked me down after I escaped Thurmond. The most important thing you ever did was learn how to survive. Don't let anyone make you feel like you shouldn't have, or that you deserved to be in that camp.
You were in one too? Rosa asked. You got out, and things got better?
They're getting there, I told her. Your mom is helping us.
There. One small, trembling smile. Has she been wearing her red suit?
Red suit? I repeated. Rosa nodded, finally sitting back against the seat.
Mom had this dark red suit she always wore when she had to go in for a big vote or debate. She said it scared the old white dudes who kept trying to shut her up or make her sit down.
No, I said. But you know what? I don't think she really needs it anymore. The girl spread her fingers over her blue uniform shorts.
And you're totally... You're sure she wants to... I mean, I would understand if she didn't want to see me. I was with my gran when they came. Mom never saw me after I got damaged. Changed, I mean.
She wants you, I said, the words spilling out from some place I hadn't dared to touch since I'd left Thurmond. More than anything, it doesn't matter what you can do or what any of the people at that camp told you. She's there, and she's waiting for you. They were the right words. I knew it by the pain that came with wrenching them up from where I'd buried them. I knew it because they were the exact words I'd fantasized about someone saying to me just before Grahams would arrive to rescue me. She turned toward me.
Thank you for coming to get us.
I wasn't sure I could trust my voice, but I said,
You're very welcome. You're going to get more kids out, right?
She asked.
Not just us.
Everyone, I reassured her, leaning my head back against the seat and closing my eyes. It was the only way I knew of to keep from crying. It was more than just a possibility. We had done this. We could do it again at Thurmond. We could make this moment everyone's reality. Every single kid. Zack brought the bus into the garage as Cole had instructed. The kids who'd stayed behind were there, opening the large rolling door we'd kept shut and locked the whole time we'd used the space. Senator Cruz and Cole stood away inside. The woman had her hands folded in front of her, and while she seemed otherwise serene, even from a distance, I could see the white-knuckled hold she had on herself. I pulled back the curtain and leaned away so Rosa could see her as well. The senator must have spotted her at that exact moment, because she lost the fight she'd been waging to control herself and ran for the bus's doors just as I stood to let Rosa pass. The girl launched herself at her mother from the top step and nearly took them both to the ground. The other kids looked away. We'd explained, on the drive back to California, what had happened in Los Angeles, and knowing that many of their parents had been involved in the Federal Coalition, or had simply lived in the area, hadn't sugarcoated the harsh reality. "But we'll help you find them," I'd promised. "If Senator Cruz doesn't know for certain where they are, we'll try searching the different networks for clues." Cole had remained where he was, nodding to the team members who came down from the bus, slapping their backs and proudly congratulating them as they spilled out and formed a cluster around him. There was a backpack at his feet, but he didn't reach for it. I knew what was about to happen, but frankly, I was too damn pissed off myself to try to prevent it. He signaled to Senator Cruz. With Rosa still pressed against her side, she said calmly, "All right, everyone, follow me. We'll get you a nice warm shower, some new clothes, and a good meal. How does that sound?" Liam and the Amplify reporter had their path toward us cut off as the Oasis kids streamed by, forming a line that followed the senator to the tunnel down, passing Zoo, Hina, Mike, and Kylie, who'd come running to meet us. They joined the group of kids who had been left behind here, standing on the white crescent moon painted onto the cement. The moment he was within range, Cole stooped to pick up the backpack and tossed it to Liam, who sagged under its weight as he caught it.
"I took the liberty,"
Cole began, his voice edged with ice,
"of packing your things. You're finished here. Get on your little bike and go home."
"I'm not going anywhere."
Liam's expression hardened as he shoved the bag back at his brother.
"And I'm just getting started. You can't make me go."
Cole let out a derisive laugh, but I was the one to answer. The words sprang into my mind, filled my mouth like bile. "No, but I could." I saw Zoo jerk her gaze from Liam to me, her lips parting in shock. It was nothing compared to the pain of seeing Liam set his jaw and blanch, his eyes burning with a terrible, silent disappointment. How dare he act like this was the real betrayal here? He'd gone behind my back for all of this. I'd sensed he was keeping some kind of secret, but nothing of this magnitude, nothing that risked the safety and lives of every kid here. And why? Because he was mad Cole dismissed his idea? He didn't understand how these things worked. He'd left the league, run away. He'd checked out of training too early to understand that you fought fire with fire.
"You went behind my back,"
Cole said, heat pouring off the words,
"and somehow contacted Amplify when I specifically told you not to. You were stupid enough to email confidential files, risking Gray's internet crawlers picking them up and tracing them back to us. You clearly lied about going to meet that other group of kids and met with Amplify instead, wasting our gas and our time. You interrupted an op in play and endangered every single kid participating in it, including yourself and the ones we rescued. And to top it off, Liam, you brought a civilian into play. I really hope it was worth it to you, because while you're getting the hell out of here, she is staying where we can keep her secured and locked up until this is all over."
"Excuse me?"
Alice stepped up, brown eyes flashing. To Liam, she muttered,
"You said he'd be pissed, but this is reality."
Cole finished, holding out his hand.
"Give me your camera."
She leaned away, pressing her hand against the device, which was now stowed away safely in her bag.
"Listen to me when I say this," she said, "because I mean it literally. Over my dead body. You think I'm scared of you? I survived the DC bombing and covered 8 major city riots, including the one in Atlanta that killed my camera guy and my fiancé.
So go ahead and try it, asshole."
"Okay, sweetheart," Cole said. "You can keep your camera. May the tender, glowing light from the digital screen keep you company when we lock you in your new room and throw away the key."
"That's..."
Liam held out an arm, stopping her. The woman didn't shrink back, though, and her ivory skin didn't lose its tinge of pink.
"You're right," he said. "I did go behind your back and find out how to contact Amplify. I met with Alice and her team, but only after I found Olivia and Brett, who I told not to come in until I was sure being here would guarantee a lower chance of getting killed than trying to survive alone in the wild. I downloaded files onto a flash drive to prove my story to Amplify. I never sent them. And you know why I did all of those things? Because no matter what you said in Los Angeles,
This hasn't been anything that resembles a democracy, let alone a fresh start. You've ignored everyone's ideas in favor of your own, and you haven't once listened to what I've tried to say, even though you know nothing.